Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Well, good morning and welcome to this session of Driven to Business. As you know, Driven to Business celebrates the entrepreneurial spirit and has long made American business the envy of the world. And whether you own a business or manage a business or just work as an integral part of one, we want to seek to provide an entertaining and useful bit of information for you. We have a great guest today, Executive Vice President with SunTrust, Sandra Young, good friend of mine. Welcome, Sandra.
Thank you, Eddie.
Sandra, you have you're an executive with a major bank here, and I'm watching the economic news all the time just as a small business guy, and I don't ever know what to think about it. I'm reminded sometimes of something I read that Warren Buffett said a long time ago. He was asked once what he thought about what the stock market was doing, and he said, I don't really care what the stock market is doing. I just care what my stocks are doing. And I'm a little bit like that with my business. I do care about the economy, but I more care about what my business is doing at any given moment. And I think most people are that way, whether they're looking at their, you know, the employment situation has to do with whether you have a job or not. I think all of us tend to be that way. But just from your perch, sort of atop the pile here in the Atlanta area, how do you see the state of the economy overall around here?
Well, Eddie, that's a good question. I think it's improving. And, you know, our analysts announced consumer confidence was up in June, and that matches with our own client insights. That's what our clients are telling us, especially our small business owners. In fact, 62% of those indicate that they feel better about their financial well-being than they did a year ago. So small businesses, you know, help drive the economy, and if they're optimistic and feel like their businesses are doing better, I think that's a good flag in the right direction.
That's great. You know, I was reading here in the last few days in the Atlanta real estate market that according to the report that I read, as of May of this year, but that housing prices in Atlanta, retail housing prices, were up about 20% over the same period last year. That's pretty significant. Are you guys seeing that as well?
We are. It's a much more positive story than it was, say, 2, 3, 4 years ago.
Yeah, I was just reading also the in a couple of papers a few days ago that is a company called AthenCare that's creating 500 new jobs over in the Athens area. There's a Enfala Roof Systems is opening a plant to employ I think 300 people up in Cherokee County, and that's all great news. I know in our business we are seeing at least an uptick. So I guess I would be part of those. Those entrepreneurs that are looking sort of favorably. Sandra, I just wonder, as a banking executive, you deal with a lot of entrepreneurial types. What's your overall impression of us, I should say, in general, and be kind?
Well, first, Eddie, let me say I respect you and admire you. I admire you as a business leader, but speaking to all entrepreneurs, you know, you are the risk takers in the business. It's easy for many of us to sit around and work hard and draw a paycheck and feel confident we know where those dollars are coming from. But our small entrepreneurs, they risk many times their own personal assets to start their business and run their business. So I very much applaud what small business owners do as the risk takers. And, you know, as you know, they employ 50 to 60%, depending on, you know, where you read it and what your source of information is, but they employ 50 to 60% of the population. So small business owners, entrepreneurs, contribute significantly to our economy.
You know, Sandra, I am a big fan of small business. I have a different background than you, and I have never worked for a large company. So I don't even, that is an experience I just don't have. In some ways, I sort of miss that. Because I think it was part of an education it was probably missing. But I've worked all my adult life for small businesses, so I just look at it that way. And in fact, the first real leadership responsibilities I ever had in the business, I remember going home. I was told by the fellow that owned the company that I was going to be taking over a department and responsible for the profit and loss in that department. And it scared me to death. And I went to church that night and looked up a friend of mine who was a CPA and gave him the financials and said, will you teach me to say something intelligent about this? So the guy sat down. Anyway, that's been my experience. Hey, when a guy like me comes to you, some entrepreneur comes to you, and he's got this great idea that he wants you as a banker to finance, what are you looking for from the guy? What do you ask him?
All right. Well, I'm going to wear my banker hat here, and I'm going to sound like one. But you're really, you know, as bankers, we're looking for someone who understands the risk that they are taking as they begin to launch their idea, their product, their niche, their service, et cetera. You know, Eddie, think about it. No small business owner opens their doors on day one and says, hey, I want to fail. I want my business, you know, I want to work hard for several years and watch my business fail. That is not what they're thinking, which is a good thing. You know, it comes back to there are risk takers.
I think actually, Sandra, if anything, most entrepreneurs, and I'll put me in at one time in that too, most people starting a business are probably too optimistic about how easy it will be to get customers. I just think most of them are. They don't look at that hard enough when they get into business.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and I think that's why business owners need to, you know, weigh their risk in starting their businesses and really mitigate those as much as possible on day one to really think beyond just, you know, this great product, this great service. But you know, here are my risks, and how do I mitigate these risks?
You know, Sandra, I always, to pump your business a bit, I always do tell people that they need a banking relationship before they need to borrow money. I'm assuming as a banker you would certainly amen that.
Eddie, you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree with you more. But, you know, this goes even beyond just your banker. It's your entire brain trust as a small business owner. You know, you need many trusted advisors such as an attorney, CPA, other experts, mentors in your industry that, you know, as you help build your network of people that you trust, that you turn to when you need help. So absolutely, relationships are a big key to success.
You know, the first year that I was in business, I sat down, and I did not intend on doing my taxes myself, but I sat down, this is before I had met with a CPA, I sat down and just ran over the figures and just almost started crying. And I remember telling my wife, said, I don't know how in the world we're going to pay these taxes. This is insane. Well, then I get a CPA, and he says, oh, you really owe very little because of this and that and the other. You know, I had no idea. I thought, boy, I'm glad I hired you.
Money well paid, huh?
Yes. You know, I'll tell you another quick story about a banking relationship. Some years ago, when I first got in business, I was so afraid of I was frankly scared of it to death of the IRS. I still sort of am, to be perfectly frank about it. And I think recent events have probably told us all we need to be more nervous about the IRS than perhaps we thought. But I used to keep all payroll in a separate account. And what I mean by that is I would transfer the gross amount into a separate bank account I had to be sure that I did not spend the withholdings anywhere by accident that I owed, you know, to the IRS. And so And as a result of that, I kept a completely separate account. So at every payday or the day before payday, we transferred money from another account into that account. It's just something we did. And as time went on, I had other people besides me doing that. Well, one weekend, the lady that was supposed to do that forgot to do it. And this was a holiday weekend. And We pay by automatic bank draft. You know, the checks, people don't issue paychecks. They just come out. Mm-hmm. And this meant that they were not going to, when they went to do those withdrawals, there was going to be nothing there. It wasn't going to come out. And I got a call about 6 o'clock that evening, and I was up in North Georgia taking the weekend off, telling me that had not been done, and I knew those accounts were going to transfer at midnight that night. Well, I panicked, of course, because this is going to mean I have employees all over the place who are going to be bouncing checks that are assuming they've got money in their bank account they don't have. Mm-hmm. And I began. I finally found my banker on the phone. He was at his lake house, and I chased him down through a variety of sources. I just told him what happened. He said, "Don't worry about it." He made a few phone calls, took care of it for me, and bailed us out of a big shot. That's just a small example. And obviously Monday morning I was down there putting that money in the account like it's supposed to be there. But that's just a small example, I think, of how a great relationship with a banker can really bail you out just from making honest mistakes like that, that they understand your situation and do it. And again, I encourage anyone to have a relationship with their banker, to know who they are, they know who you are, be friends with them, let them understand your business a bit, and deal with them in that regard.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Sandra, you and I had a discussion some years ago. It was a very interesting discussion. I've thought of it a lot of times. And you were actually kind of warning me. And you said, you know that you entrepreneurs have got a habit of riding your business all the way into the ground. That struck me as a very interesting comment. And I thought perhaps you'd like to share that with our listeners.
You know, Addie, I will, and unfortunately, it's a conversation that I've had more than once with business owners who were either not informed on the condition of their business or they chose to ignore the obvious. So think about that same spirit, that same energy that strikes an entrepreneur to want to take the risk and start a business. That can work to be a detriment when the business doesn't perform the way they want it to. I've seen where businesses were declining and was in dire need of a turnaround plan or even more, maybe a going out of business plan. And like I said, that same passion that was a strength for the company and fueled it to get it off the ground is very hard for a small business owner to redirect the other way when, you know, the obvious answer is at hand. So if your business is struggling, you need to get outside, you know, outside recommendations from people you trust who can look at it without the emotional attachment that the business owner has.
I think you're absolutely right about that. And I do think that the passion that drives some of us does make us a bit blind at times. Sandra, we have to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Keep in mind that Driven to Business is streamed live over biz1190.com and is available as a podcast on eddiemayfield.com. We'll be back. Don't go away. Welcome back to Driven to Business with our special guest, Executive Vice President with SunTrust Bank, Sandra Young. We hope you're having a great day. Sandra, you hear the euphemism all the time about businesses failing in the first 3 years. I'll be honest with you, I've never been able to track down that to be an exact figure. I've actually looked a number of times. But regardless, a lot of businesses don't make it. We talked a little earlier about a business that had been successful, that the model had perhaps changed, and they went out of business. And we can talk a little more about that as the program goes on. But in your experience for startups, what do you see as some common pitfalls that can cause a business to fail?
Addie, this is a great question. I would say, you know, as the small business owner, you need to recognize the contribution that you make as an owner, beyond your financial investment, of course. But to answer the question, what will the role be that you will play in the company? And then surround yourself with resources and others that can do the other necessary jobs. Let me give you an example. Many small business owners fill the role of the primary salesperson for their business. They may have a sales background, and that's what they're really good at. But they don't have a clue on how to actually run the business, to do payroll, bookkeeping, et cetera, all those other important jobs. So, you know, when you begin your business, you need to surround yourself with competent people that can do those jobs. And sometimes it may be a volunteer. It may be somebody doing pro bono work for you. But it's important to be sure that you've got those necessary jobs that you've identified with competent people.
You know, that goes that the old saying a lot of people have about, you know, we should all build on our strengths, and as much as possible, we should delegate or outsource our weaknesses. And that doesn't mean you don't work on your weaknesses a bit, but I think we all get a lot more out of working on our strengths. And I think even with employees, you get as a leader, you get a lot more from an employee by helping them to build their strengths and perhaps minimizing their weaknesses. But
The other thing I would add, that just like big companies, you need a compliance process in place to ensure your processes are followed, and audits if needed. For example, let's say your niche in your business is that you provide the best customer service in your industry. Well, how do you know you do that? Do you have a compliance process to inspect that, an audit process to ensure that you really do? Or as the small business owner, you know, is busy working the task on their to-do list, you know, they don't have to worry about what truly you've based the company on because you've put, you know, audits in place to ensure that that is maintained. So that's just one example of how you need to protect your brand.
Sandra, you know, there's this sort of a smart aleck poster people have around. It shows a ship like the Titanic or something going down, you know, with a stern up in the air. And it says, perhaps the purpose of your life is to serve as a warning to others. I think that applies to me sometimes. I have made about every mistake in business that can be made and still survive, I think. And I've tried to learn from it. But, you know, you're dead on with the idea about if you get tied down in the weeds of a business to where you don't see the big picture, then you either need to hire someone to look at the big picture, if that's not your thing, and a lot of business founders do that exactly. They'll hire someone else to look at the big picture because they enjoy being in the weeds. Or you need to pull yourself out of the weeds and look at it yourself. Because, I mean, I used to get criticized all the time about, I grew up as a technician, and I would get criticized all the time about spending so much time on techie things that I was ignoring bigger picture ideas. Now, I'll tell you what was driven home to me. We did a... After being in business about 5 years, we did a customer satisfaction survey, and it was a fairly elaborately done survey, done quite well. And I was appalled to find out that only 73% of our customers said that they were very satisfied with us. This was our company, EMA Electronic Maintenance Associates, and in fact, it was a little embarrassing. And I began to dig into that. I didn't believe it at first. And I began to dig into that because I thought we were doing a great job technically. And when we dug into it, we were doing a great job technically. What we were not doing a great job was on, instead of the high-tech things, we were not doing a good job on the high-touch things. We were not returning phone calls. We were not doing things on time. We were not keeping promises to people. And we set an entire operation, spent a lot of money. I mean, for me at that time, an enormous amount of money, putting systems in place and just being sure that that was going to happen. But I think what had to happen first was that I had to decide that was important, that we're going to concentrate. We're going to have good customer service here, and we're going to do whatever it takes to do that. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about in a way, that businesses that don't do that, if you don't pay any attention to it and you have customers going out the back door as fast as they're coming in the front door, at some point, you just can't put them in the door fast enough.
Right. No, that's absolutely right.
You know, another thing, I think when people are starting business, Sandra, I sometimes ask them, you hear this term, are you going to provide, is your business providing a vitamin, which is something it's nice to have, or is your business providing an aspirin, which is something someone has to have? And I think, you know, the two are a little different. And a lot of people have gotten very wealthy selling vitamins, and it's wonderful, but it's a different sales technique and a different set of customers than someone that must have your service. And again, that's just something I talk to people about when I see them beginning to start businesses.
I like that analogy.
So let's talk about leadership just a little bit. Both of us are fans of a good to great author, Jim Collins. In fact, we've been together and heard him speak. And both in Good to Great and in his later books, Collins stresses that the most common attribute among truly great leaders is humility, which is a little, seems almost counterintuitive to both most of us, doesn't it?
It does. I've got my library full of Jim Collins books, so you're right. It's, you know, he's a great author, and, you know, there's so much data and analytics done into every book, every that he produces is just, you know, packed full of where you can, you know, see the source, the genesis of what he's producing. Eddie, when I think about leadership, a quote I love is from another author that you and I both love, John Maxwell, which is people buy into the leader before they buy into the leader's vision.
Right. That's a great quote.
And I like to think of leadership as servanthood, and you really can't be a servant without humility. And with that, of course, the foundation of leadership is trust. And without it, I mean, you quickly, you know, become a dysfunctional unit or a dysfunctional team if there's not trust in the leadership. So staying humble with a servant attitude of those that you lead is really important.
I heard a speech not too long ago by another favorite author. I don't, this is not a book review we're doing here, but nonetheless, we both do like to read, Malcolm Gladwell. And Gladwell was using the example of General Hooker during the Civil War at Chancellorsville, and how that Hooker had Lee greatly outnumbered, had more intelligence, a military intelligence than Lee had, and by all accounts should have won Chancellorsville, but he became so overconfident, arrogant even, that he allowed Lee to flank him because he didn't think Lee could, and ended up in an absolute rout of what, and actually prolonged the Civil War probably by a good little while in doing that. And I was actually thinking of, when I heard that speech by Gladwell, I was actually thinking of Collins' idea, the idea that humility, Gladwell has a very interesting saying that he does in that too. He says, and I put this on a computer at times, he says, incompetence annoys me, but arrogance scares me. And he was talking about people that are in leadership positions that are arrogant because they don't pay attention to the world around them. And I think even goes back to even your other idea, Sandra, why businesses fail. If an owner or a founder of a business or a leader of a business is so arrogant that he won't look down and see what's really happening in that business, there's a great price to pay. More to come on Driven to Business. We'll be back in just a moment after the news. Stay tuned. This is Eddie Mayfield. Welcome back to this edition of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We have our special guest, Executive SunTrust Vice President Sandra Young. A reminder that today's program will be podcast on Eddie, that's E-D-D-I-E, Mayfield.com. The program is also carried live on biz1190.com, and we're glad that you're with us. Sandra, we had briefly talked about customer service, so let's talk about that a little more here. I know that at SunTrust, you guys work hard on your customer service culture. How does a company do that? How do you build a customer service culture?
Eddie, you know, that's a good question because it's a good tagline for any company, right? All companies,
everybody gives
good
service.
They're really good at it.
Right. You call them.
Right. At the end of the day, though, you don't have a service culture if you don't have consistency. And as you know, consistency in execution is hard. It sounds easy. You know, we can all get locked in a conference room and come up with a great idea, a great plan, take it to the troops, and ultimately execution. Execution isn't always easy. So you have to quickly understand that if you're looking at a team of 10 and six, you know, is doing it one way and four people are doing it another way, you don't really have a culture because, you know, 40% of your people aren't doing it the same way. So I think as leaders and managers, we have to quickly understand if serving others is what someone really wants to do. And if they don't want to serve and their actions show that they don't really want to serve, others and help others, because that's what customer service is, then we have to, you know, just help them find another opportunity elsewhere, because consistency in execution when you claim to have service is really important. So
I always say, you know, if you, any place that you go in and the service is poor, Vicki gets annoyed at me sometimes for saying this, but I always say this is a leadership problem here. It's not an employee problem. It's a leadership problem. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely agree. And that's why I think as leaders, sometimes we have to make that tough decision if someone on our team is not doesn't have that serving spirit, and that's not really what they want to do every day in their working hours, then, you know, there's probably another opportunity elsewhere.
You know, you'd said earlier that you don't think any business owner gets up on the first morning and says, I want to fail. I don't think any business leader of any sort gets up and says, we're going to have poor customer service today. I don't think anybody says that. But the problem is, I think if you don't enforce, and that's, I like your term consistency, if you don't enforce the consistency of your approach, and if everybody doesn't understand all the way down to the person answering the phone of what your culture is and what you expect out of people, that it's not going to be there. Senator, there's a great, I heard a speech many, many years ago when I was in Texas by Ross Perot. And this was before Ross got into politics. So this was when he was just known then as a great business leader, which he was. And he was talking about customer service. And he was talking about how friendly his people were at his company, and they did this and they did that. And at the end of it, he had a time for questions. It was only about 40 of us in the room there. And some guy said, Mr. Perot, how do you teach your people to be so friendly to customers? And Ross said, and I've always remembered this, Ross said, why don't you just try hiring friendly people to start with and see if that, see if that doesn't resolve the problem? I really do think there's something to be said for that. When you know, if you're hiring people that are going to be in your company, I think part of the hiring process is, do these people fit the culture that we're trying to have here?
Absolutely.
And it's not just a matter of skills. It's a matter of their attitudes. Are these friendly people?
Right. Absolutely.
Senator, you know, I as far as business changes, I kid around sometimes and tell people that I wouldn't invest a nickel today if someone were starting a business with the same business model that I started mine, because our business and our market has changed, as has everyone just about that I know about. How just as a quick insight for those of us not in the banking business, how has the banking business changed in recent years?
Well, you know, Eddie, the banking business has changed because consumer behavior has changed. So think about it. You know, all the multi-channels that we as consumers have today to do our banking has required banks to look at how they do things differently. If you remember, I mean, everything from ATMs that used to just, you know, dispense money now can, you know, accept your deposit and, you know, give out stamps, and many of the ATMs do other things. So even that piece of equipment has changed. And all the mobile applications that are available now, where you know, consumers can make deposits wherever they are, that's really changed their behavior and how they visit branches and how they do things.
And they kind of demand that now, don't they?
It's expected, right? It's pretty much expected, absolutely. And small businesses also have more options for banking than they did in the past. You know, they can do remote deposits.
Right.
Online banking, fraud prevention products that are really good for small business owners, and banks are having to adapt to these changes and really learning from clients is, you know, what do you perceive as value and what price do they put on that value?
You know, it goes without saying, I think you could have a discussion with anybody about this as to how the world has changed technically in the last few years. And it's remarkable, really, if you even stop and think about, I've been in business now about 25 years, and you know, there was, we had a very small computer. There really was no internet to speak of. And I ended up, when the net became sort of effective and everyone was telling me we had to have a website, I put one up, but it didn't do anything. It was just sort of an online brochure, basically. But, you know, today, we wouldn't be in business without the way things are done now if we didn't have a web presence. And we do so much sales over the internet, and that's how we find customers and so forth. It'd be very difficult to do that. I think even, you know, finding the way you find customers now is so different than it used to be, because, you know, so few people answer their phones now. If you don't have a cell phone number for someone, you're going to get screened. And I think all of us have just had to adjust to that. And we are just bombarded with information constantly. All of us are. And because of this unbelievable amount of messaging that each of us are hit with, I think we've all developed immunities to it. And again, a favorite author of mine, Malcolm Gladwell, he says that he thinks that we are re-entering the age of word of mouth. I find that a fascinating idea. And the more I think about it, the more interesting that is. Have you heard that?
You know, Eddie, I haven't heard that until just then when you said it. And I guess my thought are, you know, small business owners should rely on people they trust. You know, remember I talked about that brain trust, that group of people that really help them and advise them. But they shouldn't be ignorant to the amount of information and research that they can do on their own. Now, we all need to find our own filters. So, you know, we have to filter the information that comes so that we can manage that flow of information. But I personally think we're all stimulated by the amount of information flowing to us. And for the most part, use it in a positive way. But everyone has to create that own filter, right, based on, you know, interest, probably the, you know, the thought of the moment, the need at the moment. But it's, you know, it's a healthy balance, is a healthy problem to have too much information versus not enough information.
You know, I was at a gathering a few nights ago and with some folks, and we were just talking about various things. And I mentioned a book I've read recently. And one of the ladies there, we talked about it a bit, she said, tell me the name of the book again. And she actually got out a pencil and paper and wrote down the author and the name of the book. And I was thinking about that later, because I do the same thing. You know, someone like you that I respect, if you tell me, hey, you know, this is a good book, I am much, much more likely to go buy that book based on what you said than I am any advertisement on television or any radio advertisement or any email messages or anything else. And I think that's what Gladwell's talking about, was that it's not that we don't use the information. It's just that we really value these personal relationships. And I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier about having a relationship with a banker or with a CPA or with an attorney. And even within the company, your own team of people whose opinion you value and whom you trust. And I think that, and not that it hasn't always been important. I think perhaps maybe we're just coming back around to a realization of how important that is in this digital age.
Right.
You know, I was just wondering about the I was thinking the other day about the customer service thing. There was a company here in town. You may have heard of them some years ago. Webvan. I don't know if you remember this or not. They were actually, it was a great company here in Atlanta area, a wonderful company. I thought very highly of them. And what they would do is you could go online, this is several years ago, you could buy groceries. They would deliver the groceries to your house and put them in your pantry. And they came in a very nice truck. A couple of folks came in dressed in really nice uniforms, as friendly as could be. And the service was just great. And Vicki and I did it. And I even invested in the company. But they went out of business. And I think looking at why they went out of business is another great lesson of business and of customer service. They were providing a service that their business model did not support. I mean, they were not making enough money to do that kind of service. And I think that's where businesses have got to look at what business you're in. And, you know, your business model has got to look at what the cost is of being in business. What does it cost you to get a customer? I've had friends in business that I've looked at with this, and their cost of acquiring a customer is more than what that customer's worth. Well, I mean, it that only lasts so long before you get out of it. Senator, after the break, I want to talk to you about your a couple of personal things, about your career and the way that you and some advice perhaps you have for people coming into business. And I think folks are going to be very interested in what you have to say about that. A reminder once again, not to be too repetitive, but with a podcast of today's program is available on eddiemayfield.com. We carried live streaming on biz1190.com. This is Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be back right after the break. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Great program today and a great guest, Sandra Young. Sandra, like so many successful women, you've had to balance being a mother and a wife with your career. Any thoughts you'd like to share about that?
Well, you know, Eddie, first, you know, when you choose to work outside the home, and I truly say that because there's plenty of work inside the home, right?
Right.
But when you choose to work outside the home, you really need to choose something you like doing. Even if mentally you're working, you know, just to fill a void in the family income, you still need to find something that you're passionate about. I have a sister who recently said to me that life is too short to do something you don't enjoy, and she's really wise to say that.
Right.
So I think, you know, even if it's a part-time job, full-time job, just filling the void in the family income, or if you're really, you know, truly seeking a career someplace, I think it's important to follow your passion.
You know, there's a bluegrass song by Ricky Skaggs that says that a different way. It says, life's too long to live like this.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Absolutely. But I think, second, you have to find a network to help when there's not enough of you to go around, and that happens plenty of times. You know, it could be a family member that lives near you or friends that can help with after-school, you know, curricular activities with your kids. But working women have to drop the notion of having to do it all. And you know, we need to get help, and that's sometimes hard for us to think we can't do it all. But I have a story one time when I needed cupcakes for a school event, and I knew I didn't have time to bake them. So I ordered them from the bakery without icing. And once I got home with them, the boys and I put the icing on, the decorations on, you know, all in about 15 minutes. And in their eyes, Mom had baked the cupcakes.
Exactly.
So it was getting help. I needed bakery help, so I ordered those. And then I have a story for all the men that are listening in that I think would really be helpful.
Listen up, guys.
We had a dilemma at our house, like all families have, you know, from time to time. You wake up and your child is sick, but you ask yourself, just how sick, you know, are they really? I mean, can they go to school? And so we were trying to assess, you know, how sick our child was, and ultimately we decided we'd send him on to school. And so we both went our ways off to work, and it really weighed heavy on my mind as I went throughout the day. And so I said, boy, I need to call the pediatrician. I need to make an appointment, get my son in. And so I pick up the phone. I call the pediatrician. And lo and behold, my husband, who's a wonderful man, had already left work, made the appointment, picked the child up, and was already in the doctor's office. And I share that story because many times, you know, it's not all up to the mom. There's lots of men who help women who are trying to work outside the home.
No, marriage is absolutely a part. You and I have talked about this before. Marriage is a partnership. There's no question about that. And that is a great story. And your husband is a great guy.
Well, Dad's helping working moms is just tremendous.
Right. Senator, in business, there's so much negative talk today about business. It's been my experience, just to give you an idea. Is it most business people that I know are ethical and competent, and they're trying to do a good job? Now, there are exceptions. There are scoundrels in every walk of life, but by and large, they're the exception in my experience, not the norm. Is that your experience as well?
You know, Eddie, I agree on the ethics. I think, and you are a great role model. I mean, for the business owners you touch and relationships you have and all the mentoring that I know you've done throughout your life, you're just a great role model. I think in general, everyone wants to do the right thing. There's a few people, I guess, get up and think about how they can outsmart someone and take their money for nothing. But in general, I agree with you. I think ethics is very important. Being competent, though, you talk about competency. Being competent also means knowing your blind spots.
Right.
And sometimes you can be competent at one thing and not competent at another. And I think that's important when we have to know when to ask for help, because sometimes you just don't know what you don't know, right? And there's a blind spot there. So I think always being sensitive to that, knowing that we all have blind spots, and having those trusted advisors around us to say, hey, maybe you're a little off track, or can you get back on track, or have you thought about this, to try to create some competency factors is really important. But, there are still good Samaritans out there. There are people that really want to do the right thing. And, at the end of the day, it's that core desire to treat people like you want to be treated.
I absolutely could not agree more with that. I think that underlying all of business, there's sort of a moral compact, if you will, that underlies all business in a free enterprise system. And that is that, if we make a deal, it's a deal. If I tell you I'm going to sell you my lawnmower for $100, you give me $100, I give you the lawnmower. And that's not true in all cultures, but it is true in anywhere that you have a free enterprise system, because you can't get a lawyer every time to make a business deal work. It's just got to be two people are ethical and they do what they say they're going to do. Sandra, we're short on time here, but someone has had a great career like you. What do you want to be remembered for?
Well, Eddie, faith and family are my priorities. And I guess foremost, I want to be remembered as a devoted mother to my three sons and their families, and a devoted wife. But ultimately, I know I will answer to my Creator on how I use the gifts He gave me.
Yep.
So I have a spiritual gift of leadership, which I want to use in meaningful ways beyond, just my career. I want to give back through mentoring with the work that I do with nonprofit organizations. And ultimately, I enjoy it, and I would hope that is what I would be remembered for. But I have a plaque on my message wall at home that says, "I'm not bossy, I'm just helpful." And I hope it's remembered that way.
I used to kid you, Sandra, some time back, and say that I was always afraid of you. I was sort of kidding about that, but what I did mean by it was that you are a person you do have great leadership skills, and I know that church and home and SunTrust and the other organizations of which you're a part have all benefited from that, and I do admire that about you, and I appreciate that about you, and I also thank you for being a guest today. You've been a great guest. Hope you've had fun.
I have. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, we are. And for our listeners out there, remind you again that all programs here on WAFS Biz 1190 are streamed live over biz1190.com. There are write-ups. There'll be a write-up on Sandra, on Eddie, that's Eddie, Mayfield.com. And there will be a podcast of today's program shortly after it's aired, available at that same location. We do enjoy here talking about business, and we enjoy dealing with other with successful thoughtful business people like you, Sandra. And I think I've made several notes while you're talking today. I feel pretty certain the folks listening out there have done the same thing. And I want to tell you once again, I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Eddie. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you, and I hope you'll come back. You have been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.